Yeah, I knocked it out of the park. I'm a good boy. Dead Boys. It's a podcast where we talk about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. What's up, Max? How you feeling?
I'm getting over a cold.
Yeah.
Which is very good.
Praise.
I had a lot of drainage going on. A lot of expectorants.
Drainage!
Yeah. I would just, like, wake up in the morning, be coughing golf balls.
Ooh.
It's gross.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about this. You know I was sick because I saw you when I was sick.
Yeah. You were like, oh, hey, dude.
Yeah. Well, I was walking out of a taco place, like a mid-tier taco place.
Yeah, at best.
Yeah.
They're better than Condado.
Better than Condado. So let me just set this up and then I'll have you kind of take it from here.
Yeah.
Because I got lunch with my friend Joe and we were walking out of the taco place and just kind of walking north on the street. And I look over, and I see Dorian, like, driving by and pointing at me out of his window. And then he just whips across a lane of traffic and goes in the do-not-enter side of the restaurant parking lot.
Which, by the way, I've realized this thing about myself is that instead of saying hi or hey, man, I just point at people when I'm in public places, which is it's probably a really concerning thing to be on the receiving end of, and I apologize for that.
No, because I recognized you.
Yeah.
And I felt cool about that. But then when you whipped into the parking lot through the do not enter side and then whipped into a space. And then my friend Joe had never met you before.
Right.
So can you describe what you got out of your car and immediately did?
Yeah. In a frenzy, I was just like, hey, Max. Hey, my name's Dorian. Hi, nice to meet you. Hey, you got to check this out. Come over here. And I produced what I believe is a raccoon skull that I found on my camping trip in Michigan this past weekend.
Well, you just kind of like opened your trunk and then pulled out a paper bag.
And inside the paper bag was a plastic bag. And inside that plastic bag was the skull it was my buddy Dustin found it. He'll probably listen to this and yell at me later for not giving him credit. But
so there's the tip of the cap.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I found what is either a raccoon skull or a possum skull in pretty good condition. Just, it lost one of its fangs and some of its teeth on one side, but it was in pretty good shape. And, I was very excited. I was so giddy.
You were amped, and I'm glad that it was Joe's first experience of meeting you.
I feel bad, because I met Joe, but I was just, I'm glad I met Joe, but I was more excited. Like, Max, you got to see this. And you're like, oh, hey, this is my friend Joe. And I was like, yeah.
Max, look at the skull.
Max, look.
It makes sense.
Yeah, but it's in good shape. I dunked it in some hydrogen peroxide to clean up the bits and brush it with a toothbrush and should be good to go. Add it to the massive collection inside the pre-dead catacombs that we're building here in the brand spanking new Pre-Dead Boys studio.
If you notice a difference in sound quality, it's because we've got blackout curtains.
Yeah, and it's also because they don't care. Nobody notices.
They don't care.
Nobody who listens to our podcast is an audiophile. Like, I only listen to Pre-Dead Boys because of the sound quality. No, you're here. You're here for the good shit.
Yeah, the good gore.
Yes, Max, you always prepare some good shit for us. What have you researched this week?
The good shit I have prepared this week and next week will be a little spookier than normal, because it is October, the greatest month of the year.
Yes.
The most fun month of the year, the spookiest month of the year.
Yes.
So I figured we would do some spookier episodes.
Mm.
You know, a little less cultural history. This one has a pretty good amount of cultural history in it, but it's also going to be about zombies.
Yes. Excellent.
Yeah, so I know that you are completely amped about that, so I guess let's crack into the topic. We're back on the LaCroix, crack into the topic with a moment.
Crack into the topic a moment.
It was a slow one.
It's all good.
Really got under my nails.
Ooh, watch your laptop there.
Yeah, it's all drippy.
Spilled a little bit.
Chromie. Dab this off my baseball cap.
Yep. Shows how big a fan you are that Max is currently using an Indians cap to wipe water off of his... Is that Indians?
Yeah, it's Indians.
Okay.
I don't buy any caps with Wahoo on them. And I also cut... You can see here, actually. I cut the Wahoo patch off of my jersey sleeve.
Oh, hell yeah.
Replaced it with a world and a baseball bat.
Good man.
Yeah.
When are they going to change that?
Next season.
Next season?
Yep,
they're getting rid of the racist... Nice. Are they changing the name of the team?
No, not yet.
All right. One step at a time.
Yeah. I'm pulling spiders all the way.
That'd be tight.
So we are talking about zombies today.
Yes.
Not the Cranberries song, which would be very cool.
Zombie.
Hey. Yeah. That song kicks ass.
It's very good. It's better than our impression of it. That's for sure.
For those of you who might be unaware, what exactly is a zombie, Dorian?
What, you want me to just kind of fucking invent? Read All right, fine. A zombie is a fictional undead being created through the reanimation of a human corpse. The term comes from Haitian folklore, where a zombie is a dead body reanimated through various methods, most commonly magic. Modern depictions of the reanimation of the dead do not necessarily involve magic, but often invoke science fictional methods, such as carriers, radiation, mental diseases, vectors, pathogens, scientific accidents, and many, many more.
Yeah. So, in short, a zombie is a reanimated corpse. This definition also notes that it's fictional, which we'll debate in a little bit as we get into the episode.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I'm really amped. We got a really cool story. But out of all monster archetypes that exist out there, zombies have maybe stayed the most consistent out of everything. They're pretty much always just mindless, shuffling bodies with no personality or ability to think on their own. It's almost like you take a human and you reduce the human brain just to the brain stem, which tells the body to do little more than eat, move, and breathe. As I was doing this too, I was incorrect, and I thought the brainstem also controlled the urge to reproduce. So I was like, what if a little zombie boy sees a little cute little zombie girl across the corpse pile? Like, what would that be like? But I guess you never see that in movies, because it's not... The brainstem doesn't actually control reproduction. So, yeah.
Well, what a romantic picture you've painted, too, across the corpse pile. So is that the sequel to Lady and the Tramp?
Are they just sucking intestines? So, zombies, we all know them, we all love them, and there are tons of shows these days that highlight zombies. If you think about The Walking Dead, or the film Night of the Living Dead, or Warm Bodies, or whatever Fear the Walking Dead is, which I haven't watched it.
I hear it's different, but better? It looks...
It's better, okay.
It's more... The commercials make it look like it's more beautifully shot. Okay. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It all kind of runs together for me.
Seems like they just put another word in front of the title and we're like, it's different.
Now we're going to make twice as much money.
Yeah. So the idea of zombies is actually almost as old as mankind, which makes sense because if you consider this, what's the most primal fear all people share?
Gummy worms.
Nope. It is death.
Oh.
Death. Right. Death. And what's the thing people don't come back from?
Eating too many gummy worms.
If it's that one that gets passed around Amazon every couple years where it's like the review of the...
Oh, yeah, the gummy bears. Yeah.
If it's that, yes. Otherwise, death.
Death, right.
So the uncanniness of zombies, because they look like people who have died and then come back, and that's weird.
Right.
And the uncanniness and strangeness of zombies is one possible explanation for why they freak us out on a primal level so much. Do you know what the uncanny valley theory is?
Yeah, isn't that where it describes when you make something that is supposed to look human, like computer-generated imagery in a movie or a video game or something, or a lifelike puppet, It's that it's endearing and cute the more it looks like a human, until it hits a certain point of likeness to a human where it just is creepy and it's hard to distinguish whether it's human or not human.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's just insanely creepy and in that valley, the yeah. uncanny valley.
Yeah, so the term was coined by Masahiro Mori in 1970, and it describes exactly that. That feeling of looking at something that looks like a person, but is a little bit off. Like, it doesn't move correctly, or it doesn't have the correct facial gestures.
Hmm.
And we go, it's not right, I don't like that.
Yeah.
So here's a bit on why Masahiro Mori thought that the Uncanny Valley was so repulsive to us.
This revulsion usually involves robots, but can also include computer animations and some medical conditions. One theory is that our experience with the Uncanny Valley, the valley being the feeling of negative emotional response, stems from an evolutionary tendency to be repulsed by anyone who looks sick or unhealthy or wrong.
Yeah, so it's almost got a little bit to do with the like self-preservation drive that we all have, the need to survive, you know? When I was doing this, I kept thinking about the Hall of Presidents at Disney. You seen videos of that thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you're unaware, it's all of the American presidents, and they're all on, like, these weird robot skins, but they move really clunkily, and it's really, just really bizarre to watch them all move around, and, like, their mouths don't match up with the lines they're supposed to say.
God, have they made a Trump one yet? Because whatever your politics are, you have to agree that that is a horrifying prospect. A Donald Trump robot.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Yes, he exists.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
They gave him way more hair than he actually has in real life.
Oh, boy. And a way creepier neck.
They got the jowls right, I think.
They did get that. They got the high pants, too. That's very... Oh, boy. It's uncanny. That's definitely uncanny.
For sure.
So... aside from the Uncanny Valley, some others have theorized that our repulsion to zombies comes from something called apirophobia, which is the fear of eternity.
Hmm.
So here's an excerpt from an Eon publication about how the fear of eternity might be why we're so freaked out about zombies.
Apirophobia, the fear of the infinite or eternal, might seem ridiculous at first. After all, from antiquity onwards, human societies are rife with tales of people searching for eternal life. These stories, however, always contain an undercurrent of the terror that immortality could hold. The dead that Ishtar, the Babylonian goddess of fertility, threatened to release from the underworld were hungry not for brains, but just for a good meal. The menace was that they would compete with the living, not eat them. The great beyond was not, it seems, a place for destination dining. Far from the ending of awareness, zombification after death meant a meager and unhappy eternal existence. Unbearable time, day in, day out, spinning into a future the length of which we cannot even conceive.
And this is really where this starts to kind of overlap with the overall theme of our show. Just that kind of weird fear that people innately have about death and what happens after death and what that whole thing is all twisted up in.
Yeah.
Like, that description doesn't sound great, and the thing with a lot of zombie movies is, and, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I know you love horror, and you watch a lot more horror than I do.
I love a good spooky movie.
But there's one major thing a lot of zombie movies leave out. If no cure is discovered, and if Bruce Campbell doesn't chainsaw your head in half,
yes,
after the movie ends, you're a zombie, and you just walk around forever. You're conscious, but you're not able to do anything besides be hungry. And, like, who knows what happens after the zombies eat everything on Earth. After the physical fear of being chased around by a zombie that wants you dead, this fear of being condemned to a meaningless existence really highlights the fear of zombies that's existential.
Yeah.
You know? And it's almost existential in the same way that the Uncanny Valley thing is. Like, a zombie, if it's not all gory, it just moves kind of herky-jerky.
Yeah.
It's just this very innate, othering threat that zombies pose to us.
There's also just that fear of, you know, it's kind of a cliche in a lot of zombie movies where it's like, if I get bit, you gotta put me down before I turn.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes sense if you think about it. Just dying seems like a better, a good alternative to living a meaningless existence where you're always hungry.
Yeah.
And man, I'm hungry all the time as is. I don't need that for an eternity.
Imagine that forever. And also your arm falls off at some point. That suck.
And I gotta eat people. Although I've heard that people taste like pork. So I do like, you know, chorizo and bacon and pulled pork shoulder. Like,
really?
I wonder if you could prepare, like, is that an option if you're a zombie? Could you get
a zombie chef?
Yeah, like get into the culinary arts, kind of learn some ways to prepare humans. I'm not trying to just eat people sushi style, just
people
raw.
Tartar.
Yeah, none of that, thanks.
Did you hear about that episode of The Bachelor where there was a contestant who straight up looked The Bachelor in the eyes and was like, if you had to, would you eat a human body? And he was like, and then I think she was removed from the show shortly afterwards.
That's why I don't like The Bachelor, is because all of the interesting people get removed from it.
Yeah, right.
But I know you're a big fan of that show.
I do.
I love that you asked me, like, do you know about that episode of The Bachelor? Like, you already know that you watch that show entirely more than maybe most people I know.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have told you about that at some point. I don't know. Speaking of The Bachelor, you remember that Babylonian fertility goddess that
yeah.
we mentioned earlier?
Uh-huh.
You get that segue because of all, like, the...
Fertility
that happens on that show.
Yeah, I get it. I'm grossed out. Go ahead.
So the Babylonian reference to Ishtar is actually the first recorded reference we have to zombies as we recognize them today. In the myth of Ishtar descending to the underworld, which was most likely written between 4000 and 3100 BC, Ishtar threatens the people of Kernugi with this threat.
If you do not open the gate for me to come in, I shall smash the door and shatter the bolt. I shall smash the doorpost and overturn the doors. I shall raise up the dead, and they shall eat the living, and the dead shall outnumber the living.
It's so brutal.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like it's like when we did our death metal episode.
Could be a Cannibal Corpse song, huh?
Yeah, right? Babylonians. Who would have thought? So even from the beginning, we see that one of the key traits of zombies is that they eat the living. Another thing that's really unsettling about zombies is that if they're around, we as people, we're not the apex predator anymore.
Eat.
I don't really know if we are without, like, guns and knives.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're pretty much top of the food chain as things go today.
Mm-hmm.
But if zombies are around, we're threatened there.
For sure.
Yeah, we can get eaten.
We're tasty morsels just walking around.
Yeah. And it's creepy, but as the thing we read up top mentioned, is any of this even real? Are zombies fictional, or do they exist? The answer is maybe. Kind of.
Maybe?
Yeah.
That might be generous, but...
Yeah.
All right, let's see where this goes.
I think we can build a pretty neat case.
Okay.
It's not really like the way that they're portrayed in movies, where they're gonna just chomp your flesh off your bones.
Okay.
But there are some similarities. So the actual zombification process, as it has been practiced around the world, and a lot of people will kind of dial this into Haiti specifically, and that's a lot of what we're going to talk about. But this really is a thing that's been recorded globally, which is really interesting. It involves the systematic removal of the will of a human being, most often through persistent drugging and brainwashing. So this basically makes it equivalent to torture.
Yikes.
It sounds like when you have someone locked up in, like, Guantanamo Bay. I remember hearing stories about that, where they would lock people up and just beat them a lot and make them listen to, like, the Barney theme on loop again and again and again. So if any of this forced labor and torture stuff sounds familiar, it may be because some researchers think that the Haitian belief in zombification in particular... That's where we draw most of our current knowledge about zombification.
Mm-hmm.
They think that that comes from the practice of slavery. This is what Professor Amy Willens from UC Irvine thinks.
The zombie belief has its roots in traditions brought to Haiti by enslaved Africans and their subsequent experiences in the New World. The modern concept of zombies was strongly influenced by Haitian slavery. Slave drivers on the plantations, who were usually slaves themselves and sometimes voodoo priests, used the fear of zombification to discourage slaves from committing suicide. Even if a slave committed suicide, once resurrected, the zombie remains under the control of the plantation owner as an eternal slave, having no will of its own.
Yeah, so that's an instance where zombification was used as a threat. And that kind of lines up with some of the stuff we were talking about earlier, where it's the existential dread of losing your autonomy to this person who has the ability to just bring your body back to life and control you, you know?
It's horrifying.
Yeah, it's freaky.
Yeah.
There's some instances in Haitian voodoo where the soul is separate from the body, but here they believe that the soul would be imprisoned in the body, but the body would be controlled by the magic. And so you would be like aware, but trapped in basically, you'd basically be like a spiritual Krang, where like,
okay.
Can you describe Krang for those unfamiliar?
The Ninja Turtles character, which is basically a little weird alien inside of a big man. And he's like, it's like a little TV screen that he sits inside of to control this big muscular dude.
Yeah.
It's real weird.
Yeah, they basically viewed it as almost the reverse of that, where the soul would be in the body, but the body would be controlled from the outside, and the soul would have no, you know, autonomy, basically. It's weird. It's creepy.
Yeah.
So, again, one explanation for the phenomenon of zombification is just regular old brainwashing.
Right.
You know, we've done that day in, day out.
Typical every day. Typical. You do it. I do it. We all do it.
The media does it. The media.
The media.
However, according to a few reports I was able to dig up, there seems to be a little more going on here. One of the most famous accounts is by author Zora Neale Hurston from her travels in Haiti. This is an excerpt from her 1938 book titled Tell My Horse.
I had the rare opportunity to see and touch an authentic case. I listened to the broken noises in its throat. If I had not experienced all of this in the strong sunlight of a hospital yard, I might have come away from Haiti interested but doubtful. But I saw this case of Felicia Felix Mentor, which was vouched for by the highest authority, so I know that there are zombies in Haiti. People have been called back from the dead. The sight was dreadful, that blank face with the dead eyes. The eyelids were white all around the eyes, as if they had been burned with acid. There was nothing you could say to her or get from her except by looking at her, and the sight of this wreckage was too much to endure for long.
So this was recorded by Zora Neale Hurston while she was writing a kind of cultural history of the Caribbean. She would just kind of travel around and go to all these villages and explore the folklore that people there had retold. And while she was there, she encountered this woman, Felicia Felix Mentor. There's some doubt about this, but there does exist a single photo of what Felicia looked like after the zombification. I gotta be real, it's unsettling. Here it is.
Oh, man. Yeah, she just does not look all there.
Yeah, and it kind of fits in with that uncanny valley thing where this woman is a human being, but she almost is holding her body in the way that the like Night of the Living Dead zombies move, where it's just kind of angled.
Yeah, kind of sauntering.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's definitely unsettling.
Which is more unsettling, that or the Trump bot?
I think Trump bot is a little more likely to be real. You know, this photo is, there's been some like going on about it over the years.
Oh, okay.
Trump bot exists in real life.
Yeah, that's a horror we can't escape.
Yeah. As much as you want to kind of pick apart bits of Hurston's story in Tell My Horse, she definitely believed that she had seen something unsettling. And she would stick with this claim. She wrote the book in 1938. And what I have here is a clip from a 1943, so 5 years later, not a short amount of time. This is from a 1943 radio interview that Hurston gave on the Mary Margaret McBride Show.
Zora, when you got to the zombie, I noticed you kind of left him, her or him out of this book. That was in your other book,
yes, wasn't it? Well, I thought I'd said enough about the zombie. It had been talked about, and the book had come out in England, and it caused a sensation over that too, and I'd been on We the People and talked about zombies, and I'd been out in Hollywood, and Arthur Hornblow hired me after reading my book, Tell My Horse, and I talked about zombies so much out there, and the Sec Woosh, and...
Well, I never heard you talk about them, did you, Vincent?
No, I haven't.
Talk about the zombie just a wee little bit. Mm.
Well, a zombie is supposed to be the living dead. People who die and are resurrected, but without their souls. And they can take orders, and they're supposed to be never to be tired, and to do what the master says without cease and without being tired. Naturally, it would be futile for me to attempt to try to explain everything. I do know that people have been resurrected in Haiti. I do not believe that they were actually dead. I believe it was suspended animation. And since there's no embalming there, it's possible. And since people are not buried below ground, they have the above ground vaults as they do in New Orleans. And they take corpses out. It's been proven, there have been cases proven where folks have been dead and folks thought they were done for, and months later somebody finds them somewhere in some hidden place actually alive, but without their minds. And the process is that the Boka, you know, they have two kind of priests in Haiti. The Hungon, which is the regular voodoo priest, and then the Boka, who's supposed to be a wicked priest. It is stated that a Hungon is not a Boka, and a Boka is not a Hungon. However, one and the same person sometimes acts the same, so that you have to take that with a sort of box of salt about one of them not being the same. But anyway, they know something. They go and awaken the person from the grave, and the Society des Morts, the Society of the Dead, goes with him, and they surround this tomb at midnight with their lights, and the Boka goes inside, and with a supposedly the soul of the dead man in his hand. Some Boka say they carried in a bottle. Others say they carried in his hand. And they began to strike this dead body to wake him up, and at the same time holding his soul on his nose. And he must answer, because his soul is there. And so he answers. And when he begins to stir, they handcuff him so that he can't resist. And then they beat him and beat him and finally wake him up thoroughly. And he's carried in the center and of this Society of the Dead. And they must march him past his house where he lived, because if they don't, he will regain his consciousness someday. But if they carry him past the house where he lived, he will never remember again who he was or where he lived or anything. He will just be an animated person. And maybe he's taken to some distant plantation and put to work. And his relatives think that the person... But before that, he goes to the Hum Fort. That is the voodoo temple. And there he's given a drop or two of a colorless liquid, and in the course of a ceremony, and he will never remember again. Of course, they never give them salt. They claim that salt will tend to counteract that, and they will remember who they are. And this particular zombie, whom I photographed, whom I think I'm the first person on earth and probably the last one to ever photograph a zombie, she had died in 1907, and nobody saw her anymore until 1936. When she was found naked on a road. But she remembered a little. She remembered where she used to live, and she went to this plantation that used to be her father's, which was now her brother's. She was identified by her brother, her ex-husband, her son, who was now grown. He was 2 or 3 years old when she died in 1907, and she was identified, and she was officially identified by the Haitian government, and that was all the records of her death and her burial, and I photographed her in 1936. Mm-hmm. And in Haiti. The picture was published first in Life magazine and is in this book here, Tell My Horse, the picture of the zombie.
See, I've never read Tell My Horse. That's why I didn't know it.
Yes. Zombies do exist, but the moot question is whether they can raise people from the dead. I think it is that they have brought drugs from Africa, which the so-called civilized world does not know about, but which they will find about, perhaps eventually, and which produce certain effects that we don't know about.
Suspended animation?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. That could be.
Yes.
It seems, I've heard that theory advanced before, I suppose.
Certainly there are too many cases of proven zombies to claim they do not arouse people who've been allegedly dead.
Shit, dude.
Interesting stuff, right?
That is real freaky.
Yeah.
First of all, voodoo shit just creeps me out. I'm not a superstitious person, but I do think that there are cases where people mess with magic and shit and encounter some weird things.
Yeah.
And that freaks me out. Just across the board. Not just voodoo culture, but in general. People messing with dark magic shit.
Yeah.
But also, something just rubs me the wrong way about how exploitative this is. That it's...
Right?
It's a person taking advantage of another human being and...
Eternally.
Doing, yeah. I mean, even if some of this is fabricated, like the whole not never dying thing,
yeah,
there might be some explanation for that. It's still inhumane.
Yeah.
Just how a human being is being treated as an object, just something that serves a purpose for someone else and exists for no other reason.
Yeah, you can say that Hurston was a folklorist, and so some of this was almost primed in her to believe this when she met this woman by, you know, going around and regularly picking up these stories. But she's so calm and collected and logical sounding as she recounts this. To me, it lends a lot of credence to what she's talking about. Like, she's very logical, she's very straightforward with it, and she just recognizes it as a thing that happens because it sounds like she really believes that it's a thing that happens.
Yeah, like little things that she can explain, very specific things about the account and what she saw and what people did, and there are other things where she doesn't overstep her bounds, and she's not, you know, an Alex Jones sort of sensationalizing the story to make it as crazy and interesting and compelling as possible.
She's an anthropologist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Interesting.
She describes it in a lot of terms that have to do with, like, drugging and medical abuse, specifically.
Right.
So, my friend Dave has actually done some medical work in Haiti, especially after the hurricane they had. And I asked him about this at one point. I was like, did you, you know, you were down there in 2016. Did you hear anything about this? Did you hear anything about zombies? Is that still talk that goes around? And he actually described it as very briefly seeing someone. I think the term he used was gorked.
Gorked?
Gorked. Which is like a medical black humor term for basically like a vegetative state.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's a dentist. He's got a medical degree and he described seeing someone who was moving but seemed to be almost catatonic.
Ugh.
So, I don't know. That seemed weird. But he described it as seeming like the person had been lobotomized.
Hmm.
So, lobotomization is a, like, quote-unquote medical procedure because it's also basically just a horrific form of abuse.
Right.
But, you know, it's a procedure where a rod is inserted into the prefrontal cortex of the brain, usually through the eye socket, and then the prefrontal cortex is destroyed or damaged in some way. So this happened a lot in America in the 50s and 60s, usually to make women who were independent and didn't want to do everything their husband said, just to make them more docile.
Which
is really fucked up.
Yeah.
But some people think that the process eventually made its way down to Haiti. The thought is that poor or vulnerable Haitians are sometimes kidnapped and then lobotomized to destroy their free will and make them basically docile to the point where they will do whatever a slave driver tells them to do. And then after the lobotomy, the kidnapped person is regularly given a cocktail of sedatives and drugs to make them more pliable. So then they're basically just kept in slavery for as long as their enslaver keeps giving them drugs. And this was actually put forth by a Harvard-educated scientist who went down to Haiti, and this is what he dug up.
Wade Davis, a Harvard ethnobotanist, presented a pharmacological case for zombies in a 1983 paper in the Journal of Ethnopharmacology and later in two popular books, The Serpent and the Rainbow and Passage of Darkness, The Ethnobiology of the Haitian Zombie. Davis traveled to Haiti in 1982 and as a result of his investigations, claimed that a living person can be turned into a zombie by two special powders being introduced into the bloodstream, usually via a wound. The first, called Powder Strike, includes tetrodotoxin, or TTX, a powerful and frequently fatal neurotoxin found in the flesh of the pufferfish.
Just like that Simpsons episode where Homer eats the pufferfish.
Yeah. The second powder consists of deliriant drugs, such as Datura. Together, these powders were said to induce a death-like state in which the will of the victim would be entirely subjected to that of the master.
Again, this stuff is, like, dark.
Yeah.
Like, this feels like almost a little more dark and violating than voodoo does in some ways.
Right.
Because you're willfully enslaving someone. But this theory actually goes back pretty far as well. You been to a Shakespeare in the Park recently?
I have. I saw Frankenstein there.
Oh, that's not Shakespeare. Do you think that's Shakespeare?
Shit. Nope. Okay, they fucking call it Shakespeare in the Park, even though it's a lot of different plays. Fuck you, dude.
Fuck.
All right.
I've seen some weird stuff there.
Yeah, they have performances.
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen Shakespeare in the Park recently. You caught me. Are you happy?
I saw Macbeth, and I either saw Macbeth or Hamlet, and I fucking hate Shakespeare. It's so boring and weird.
Really?
Yeah, I was really bored by it. I don't know. But if you would have gone and seen Romeo and Juliet, you would have seen an example of this kind of sedative neurotoxin effect.
Oh.
Because what happens in Romeo and Juliet...
Are you going to spoil the ending?
Yeah.
All right, spoiler alert
if you haven't fucking read a book since the 1400s.
If you fucked around in fifth grade and didn't finish the reading you were supposed to.
Yeah. But Juliet takes basically like a neurosedative, which causes Romeo to think that she's dead. That's thought to be nightshade, probably, which is commonly available in England around the time. But this theory has its roots stretching back to then. This kind of brings us to a thing that even Hurston mentioned in her interview that we listened to earlier. I found a U.S. government report on disposition of remains in Haiti, because I guess the government has to write about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. That report estimates the cost of a complete embalming in Haiti to be about $230. So that's not bad for America.
That's a good deal.
But the average income in Haiti is only about $350 a year.
Sheesh.
In the United States, the cost of a traditional funeral will run about 15% of the average annual income. In Haiti, this means that the cost of embalming alone, without the funeral, is 65% of an annual income.
Right.
One day we're going to recalibrate the funeral industry. We're going to get there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeesh. But when you think about it like that, it's not a surprise that folks typically skip embalming entirely and bury their loved ones as quickly as possible. So, once a person has had their death faked by a toxin, and their family thinks that they're dead, they're usually buried within 1 or 2 days. After this, the grave robbing happens. We're going to harken back to the last episode. Now, this is almost always done under the cover of darkness, so it's tough to know how it actually goes down. So, I figured, just like our spontaneous human combustion episode, why not hear firsthand from someone who has actually survived this experience?
Survived being buried.
And zombified.
Okay.
This story is outrageous. Here's a photo, my dude, here.
You said here's a photo, and I was expecting, oh, great, another whacked out zombie. This is a real chill looking dude. He's just sitting on a grave.
This is my dude.
He's sitting on a gravestone chilling. Hey, what's up?
Clairvius Narcisse.
Clairvius Narcisse?
Who is reclining on his own tomb.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Let's read his story.
On April 30th, 1962, a man by the name of Clairvius Narcisse checked into the Albert Schweitzer Hospital in Haiti. He had a fever and complained of a sensation described as bugs crawling on his skin. The staff gave him a room at the hospital when his condition quickly deteriorated. 2 days later, doctors pronounced him dead. An official death certificate confirmed the end of his life. His immediate family held a funeral and interred the body at the local cemetery. They sealed the coffin with nails and buried him in a traditional manner. At some point after his funeral, someone disturbed Narcisse's grave. During the night, a Bokor, or Haitian voodoo sorcerer, dug him up and removed him. Narcisse was beaten, bound, and forced to drink a potion before being taken to a sugar plantation. Once there, he encountered others in a state similar to his own. Narcisse had to work in the fields, and the Bokor constantly gave him additional injections of the same potion to maintain his zombie-like state of mind. For the next 2 years, Narcisse remained on the plantation until the Bokor that recruited him died. Even though he was now nothing more than a lifeless husk, Narcisse took this chance to wander off unseen. 18 years afterward, Narcisse returned to his home village, where he sought out his sister, Angelina. Angelina was in a village market when Clervius approached and identified himself. As proof of his claim that he was her brother, he added a childhood nickname that only the two of them were aware of. Understandably, Angelina was shocked to her very core, but she assisted in an investigation. This investigation showed that Narcisse was who he appeared to be. He really was Angelina's brother. Narcisse's return in 1980 was not as well accepted by the other people in his village. The villagers were shocked to see him and made such a commotion that the government authorities placed him in jail to protect him from attack. His family did not welcome him back home. While under medical surveillance, Narcisse could fully recall the doctors declaring him dead and being buried alive. He also claimed to be conscious when the Bokor dug him up shortly afterward. The memory of his 2 years as a slave still haunted him, and he remembered working the plantation every waking moment from dawn to dusk. This very long day was only interrupted once, for a quick meal break. Narcisse also explained his reasoning for not finding his way back home sooner. He had argued with his brother the day before Narcisse became ill, and he outright blamed his brother for what happened to him, and only returned once the brother had passed away. It is generally believed that multiple members of Narcisse's family conspired to sell him into this form of ultimate slavery, thus explaining their hostile attitude towards his return.
That's a crazy story.
They made a movie out of this yet? Holy shit.
I don't think they have.
That's crazy.
But it's, I mean, he describes a lot of symptoms similar to, like, locked-in syndrome. Where you have, like, if you've ever read Johnny Got His Gun or seen the videos for One by Metallica.
Yeah.
That's what that is, where the person is in their body and conscious but can't move themselves or react in any way.
Right.
So where do we, you know, where do we take people at their word here? If this kind of stuff can theoretically happen, and there are people with a very developed knowledge of various poisons and toxins, this doesn't sound like it would be completely out of the realm of possibility. Especially if, you know, people can go a long time without eating, and if you can keep a body breathing, you could theoretically make it last for 3 days, you know?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a huge issue. And think about how drugs like PCP and how manic people get on that stuff. If you think about a description of a Haitian zombie being someone who basically just works all day without getting tired, that sounds like it might be kind of similar, just without the, like, biting people's faces off and stuff like that.
Right, right.
Which is, I guess that's kind of a zombie thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's another thing where people have kind of tried to poke some holes in the story over the years and have said some pretty disparaging things about this dude's character. But again, it's a weird story that he doesn't really benefit anything from making up.
Yeah.
Because he was almost completely culturally rejected by saying that it had happened. So I don't know about that. That's a weird one. You can look into that yourself if you want to learn more about it. Let's put a bow on that, and let's close this episode out with a little bit of a better note. Let's talk about zombie movies.
Hell yeah.
So the zombie movie genre actually began only 3 years after one of the first instances of the word zombie appeared in print. These filmmakers were really quick to get on stuff back then.
The first major mention of the word zombie was in William Seabrook's sensationalized 1929 study of Haitian voodoo, titled The Magic Island. In the early 30s, Hollywood was beginning to experiment with franchise monster films, and it was only 3 years later, in 1932, the first feature-length zombie film appeared, director Victor Halpern's White Zombie. His film starred Bela Lugosi as a voodoo priest, Murder Legendre, Legendre?
Sure, I don't know.
I haven't seen
they it. They were making it. This dude's first name was Murder.
Murder Legendre, the owner of a Haitian sugar mill operated by mindless human zombies.
Have you ever seen White Zombie?
No.
I watched a few clips of it, and I guess because they had to make Bela Lugosi have a costume and everything he was in, they really dressed him up for this movie. And he's got like a unibrow that rivals mine when mine's at full strength.
Yeah.
The dude has a powerful brow.
Yeah, has he got a 100% Anthony Davis going on?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You remember that Vine or that video where Anthony Davis shaved his unibrow?
No.
It was a trick? Yeah. It was like an April Fool's thing. It was really goofy.
No.
Basketball season's about to start up, yeah.
It's ball season.
Love it.
Ball's life.
So zombie movies kept kicking until the mid-40s. Zombie films were especially popular during the years of the Hays Code, which were the rules and regulations that censored filmmaking in the United States.
Hmm.
Like, you couldn't show it, like, an ankle.
Ugh. I don't want to see that. An ankle? You kidding me? In this day and age?
Oh, How dare you? I've never looked at a woman's ankle
have
before.
Have you seen an ankle? You better not have.
On the internet.
I'll call the fucking police right now if you saw an ankle.
The prude police. So zombies were popular during movies during this day because they easily circumvented a lot of the rules that Hollywood had put in place governing violence and gore in movies. Like, if you think about the old horror movie zombie, where they kind of just look like people, but maybe they've got like a red splotch on their face and they just kind of like go like,
yeah,
kind of scooting around like that. They look a little beat up, but they don't have half-rotted skulls, so you could get away with showing that. And unlike a lot of other movie monsters, it's fairly easy to show a character's death in a zombie movie without showing a lot of gore.
Hmm.
You think about all those goofy shots where it's like a high angle shot where someone falls on their back and then a bunch of zombies just dogpile onto the person.
Okay, like, yeah.
That's all you really need to show.
Sure.
It gets the point across. It's not like Dracula where you have to have this person like get their neck bitten into and a bunch of blood come out.
Yeah, and I guess it was before, you know, Dawn of the Dead style, they show the chest ripping open and all the intestines being yanked out of the person.
Yeah, we had to go full ankle on that one. We need to get those prudes out of their spots in Hollywood.
That's right.
Those media prudes who won't make this podcast into a TV show.
You dirtbags. You cowards.
But it's the aforementioned Night of the Living Dead that really kicked off the modern zombie movie as we know it today. Night dropped in 1968, and it was a runaway success right off the bat. It's about a group of folks who get trapped in a small house during a zombie attack. You know, the normal zombie movie plot.
Par for the course.
Yeah. But a lot of the beauty in Night comes from the brutality of the whole thing. It's a black and white film, even though it came out in 1968, and it's really lo-fi, and it's one of those movies that almost makes you, like, squint to see what's going on.
Yeah.
So, like, you'll be, like, looking at a character as they're reacting to something going on in the foreground, but then in the background you see something start moving, and you're like, uh-oh. But you're kind of, like, looking through the screen fog.
Sure.
And then it turns out it's a zombie, and it's really creepy. It holds up really well. And another neat thing about Night is that it featured a black man, Dwayne Jones, in the leading role. You remember how that movie ends, too?
No. I don't.
Yeah. So, again, spoiler alert. He ends up being the only survivor at the end of the film. But then as he leaves the house at the end of the night to be like, look, I lived. I made it. He's immediately shot by some cops that roll up because they think that he's infected. And that played into a lot of the racial tensions that were very alive at that point, especially in the South.
Yeah.
You know, This was the time when black people were still very used to having to carry around guidebooks that told them, you know, what diners were safe to go to and what hotels were okay to stay at.
Right.
You know, it would have been a very kind of overlap into the real world for an otherwise pretty fantastic movie.
Yeah.
So, the director of Night of the Living Dead, George A. Romero, would end up being the driving force behind American zombie cinema almost up until the present day. He died in 2017, but his legacy influenced a lot of massive franchises. The whole Living Dead franchise was his vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
The entire Walking Dead thing owes a ton to him. even stuff like Resident Evil, pretty much anything that includes that zombie motif can be traced back to his influence.
For sure.
Do you have a favorite zombie movie to close us out on?
It might just be Shaun of the Dead.
It's good.
It's so good. It's hard to say which one is the best, but I am a big sucker for any kind of media that has like a wide spectrum of human emotion in it. And that is a movie that is genuinely terrifying and heartbreaking in some spots.
Oh, absolutely.
But also is hilarious. It cuts the tension in good points of the movie, but at the times where it's meant to be serious, it's not like
it's heavy, yeah.
It's not like a Marvel movie where they undo all of the emotional power of a scene by being like, oh, like
Spider-Man makes a fart happen. Joke.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so well done. You know, I was thinking of, you know, iconic guts being ripped out of a human being scene.
Yeah.
And that one has maybe my favorite one, where it's excruciating to watch, and it's in the middle of this kind of lighthearted romp comedy movie, but it's a genuinely heavy and scary moment in the film.
Yeah.
It's so well done. That if I had to pick one, that might be it. But I don't know. I gotta think about the Evil Dead series is so incredible.
That's what I think I have to go with.
And you know, you were talking about Night of the Living Dead, and I don't think I've actually seen it all the way through. But I watched the fuck out of Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, is that the mall? That's the mall one,
they're
right?
Trapped in the mall.
Yeah.
There's just so many good movies in the genre. And it's a very overdone genre of storytelling.
Sure.
We definitely have a glut of zombie movies, zombie games. That's a big thing with board games, where it's just like, really, like
Left
how many
Dead
more?
And all that.
Yeah, how many more zombie games do we need? But, you know, it makes sense. Why it's an enduring concept.
Yeah, if it works, it works.
Yeah.
That's all I had. So,
that's tight.
Yeah, it's a great thing to close us out on.
Thank you very much, Max.
No problem, Dorian. Happy Halloween.
Ooh, I'm not gonna sleep. I genuinely am really creeped out by some of this stuff.
All right, it's weird
that we talked about. It's super weird and bizarre and scary. So,
it's that line that really gets blurred between actual death and what it means to live on after death, and
yeah,
some existential questions that people are putting forth here.
For sure. And the best horror rides a line where you can have fun with it, but it's also rooted in real world scary things. This is very good.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is a very good episode. Tell us what you think. Talk to us. You can find us on social media at Pre-Dead Boys in pretty much all places, except Vero. That's pretty much dead, right?
So I got a notification recently that someone added me as a friend on Vero, and I had to actually figure out where Vero was still on my phone.
Yeah, you lost it? It was still installed.
It was still installed.
I uninstalled it to make room for fantasy football. It's just like, this isn't going to pan out. So don't find us on Vero, but we're on Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. I'm getting back up to date on the Instagram, by the way.
I
was slacking, but I'm posting fun images and things that we talk about in the episodes and little episode clips. If you want to hear a little preview of something before diving into the full episode, check all that stuff out at Pre-Dead Boys. You can also email us predeadboys@gmail.com. What's your favorite zombie movie or game? You know, is there a good example of this stuff that's not just super played out and overdone? You know, something that sticks out in your mind? Tell us. We love just geeking out about this shit and talking to y'all.
Hell yeah.
If you would like to support this podcast and what we do, that would be tight. You can invest in the success of this podcast financially with just $3.
Make us unkillable.
Make us unkillable. You don't have to send us weird powders. You can just send us $3.
Yeah.
We'll make our own powders. Thanks.
You can go to pufferfish.
Yeah. Go to ko-fi.com/predeadboys. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, we'll read it on an episode. Here's the latest review we got.
You told me not to read this in advance. I'm excited.
Yeah, I always tell you. Because you always surprise me with the weird shit that you tell me about for a 45-minute episode. This is all the element of surprise I get.
Oh, good.
This review is titled, World's Best Fan, all caps.
Oh.
It comes from LaCroix's Best Fan's Best Fan.
What?
LaCroix's Best Fan's Best Fan.
Us. Okay.
I didn't write this. Did you write this?
No.
All right. It must have been someone else. They say nice things. They say, you guys are super fun and down to earth. You make the topic of death so easy to accept and understand. But why Waterloo? What about LaCroix? I'm trying every flavor and getting used to LaCroix now. Fine. I'll try Waterloo then. By the way, happy Dirty 30, Dorian. I bet I'm the first one to say that. You are. It's a little early. It's about 6 months too early.
Flirty 30.
But thank you. That's very nice of you. I also love that all of the sentences end in exclamation points. And it reminds me of the kid in Pokemon who fights with grass-type Pokemon. And he said, I like shorts. They are comfy and easy
bug
to wear.
Bug catcher.
Yeah, the bug catcher. That's right. what a jovial and uplifting, wholesome little review. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse.
New songs.
They have a new music video that you should look up on YouTube. And they're sneaking some of the stuff off of their upcoming new album onto the internet. I'm told that they're going to put it out in 2019, so keep an eye out for that. They're a fantastic band.
Yeah.
You should definitely support them. And thanks for listening. So what else can we look forward to this holiday season? You got big plans? Or are you going to keep those close to the chest? You're gonna keep it secret?
I'm so bad at costumes.
Okay.
I really like the moth and lamp couple's costume because I like the new moth meme that's been going around.
It's very good. Yeah, I don't know if I want to do a couple's costume or if I just want to cut it on my own. I don't know. We gotta spend some time thinking about this and all the other fucking dope content that we're going to put out on our podcast.
Yeah, cool shit.
Yeah. So thanks for listening. Max and Dorian here, reminding you, you're going to ride.
But the lady in front of me paid for my Taco Bell.
What?
Yeah.
What a sweetie.
And like in my car, like I must have looked really disheveled or something. So, like for to get someone to pay for your Taco Bell.
She thought she was performing a good act of charity that day.
Yeah.
Oh, this poor guy.
No.
That's crazy because you just got a haircut and you look very handsome and like.
Thank you.
You have it together
in life. I don't know. This woman didn't think so. I don't know.